We're taking a look at asset-backed financing. Now, many of us go into business and have requirements from a business perspective, whether they're cash flow related or otherwise. And more often than not, you find that it's difficult to obtain cash or liquidity at short notice to finance certain transactions or certain deals. And this is where asset-backed financing becomes a rather useful tool. But some people find it a little less useful, and there are a lot of misconceptions around how this all works. But let's dig into this and see if we can try and unpack it. I'm joined on the line by the co-founder of Lamna Financial, Charles Meyerowitz, to take a look at this and just try and make sense of this. Charles, good evening. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start at the very beginning. What is asset-backed financing and how does it work?
Good evening, Jimmy. Thanks for having me on the show. As you correctly said, there's a great misconception on the flexibility and the space that asset-backed finance has to play. I think one's got to make clear that it's not general finance. In our phraseology, we would call it project-based finance. So what I mean by that, it's generally temporary for a shorter period of time to enable a project or to enable the completion of a project or just to kind of mismanage cash flows in the process of that project. How it actually works, which you alluded to, is asset-backed finance. The collateral that enables the finance is an asset, a movable asset. And based on the value of that movable asset, we would be able to advance you a sum of money almost immediately based on the collateral value of that asset. And I think that's one of the benefits that it is, fairly quick and fairly simple to enable if the need arises.
Charles, now this can obviously provide some unique benefits, but it also does obviously come with some conditions. What are the benefits to going the route of asset-backed financing, and what are the typical conditions that we see being imposed or industry standard conditions around this sort of financing?
Okay. So there are a lot of benefits. Probably the primary benefit is the speed at which it can happen. Literally within hours, you can have money at your disposal or capital at your disposal, as opposed to going the rigorous process that traditional banks have. Because of the nature of the transaction, because of how it is secured, we needn't have the budget and the forecast and the cash flows and everything else that comes with a traditional bank application. So, that's primarily the benefit. It's very flexible. Your cash flows will determine the period of the loan facility. We try as best as we can to tie into your cash flows to enable a solution at the end of the day rather than to put you under more pressure. It's very simple. There's not a hell of a lot of paperwork. So long as you own the asset, so long as there's no other finance on the asset and we can attribute value to the asset, we can release the funds against that asset in almost no time. And probably, the profile of the people that take this type of finance are very entrepreneurial, which leads me to my next point. There's really no comebacks. If the loan doesn't work out, and unfortunately sometimes it is, there's no blacklisting, there's no judgments, there's no lawyers. You don't have that negative energy and that defense mode in the event that the loan doesn't work out. In order to qualify for it, you need to own an asset. It needs to be fully encumbered. It needs to have some form of market value. Typically, the assets would be cars, watches, jewelry, artwork. Assets of value that traditionally the banks can't really get their grips to. I mean, other than the West Bank and those formal processes, I think the benefit is that we can take an asset that you own and we can actually monetize it fairly quickly to give you the capital that you need for your project that you're busy with.
Charles, you alluded to the fact that the downsides are not legally related and all of that, but the paperwork obviously does suggest that there are some conditions or some consequences for not repaying that loan. Let's be open and honest about that. Do you then take control or ownership of the assets? How does that process work?
Yes, that's exactly right, as you described it. In the event that the loan doesn't work, what you have to lose, unfortunately, is the asset that you've offered up as collateral. But that's it. The point I'm trying to make is you don't get caught up in this legal fight and you don't get judgments that you can't get access to capital in the future, because as we all know, life happens. Life does happen. You go into an opportunity and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And you've taken the guts to actually to get it going, but it may not work. And all you have, and I really mean it, all you have to lose is the asset that you've offered as collateral.
That is still quite a hefty loss, but at the same time, I think it is, as you rightly mentioned, worth understanding that this is an alternative type of financing that allows you to access capital you may not otherwise have been able to access. So there is obviously an associated risk that comes with that, like any other type of financing that exists. Right. Charles, how do we then draw the fine line between asset-backed financing and loan sharking? Because a lot of the misconceptions and a lot of the conversations in this space around asset-backed financing come to the point where someone charges excessive interest rates, or someone comes in and there's unfair terms, or the loan seemingly is irrepayable, for lack of a better term, because it's just such steep terms. How do we draw that distinction, and what is important to note as someone looking for asset-backed financing? What do I need to look at when I approach a lender?
Jimmy, I think the first thing that you've got to get is have confidence in your counterparty, have confidence in the lender that you're dealing with. Truth be told, paper and everything around it is it only goes to a point. But if your counterparty, if your lender doesn't have integrity, it really doesn't count for much, respectfully. So what I would suggest is you need to deal with somebody who's been in business. We've been in business for over 10 years. We've advanced 2 billion rand over 11,000 clients in that period of time. As you correctly say, it is a loan. It's an alternative form of lending, but it is regulated. So make sure that your lender is registered with the National Credit Regulator, because you know it's not a free-for-all. It is a very regulated transaction. It's an alternative type of transaction, but it still is a regulated transaction. So to answer your question, make sure that your counterparty or your lender has the integrity and the credentials, and the is long in the tooth, has been around for enough time to actually work with you, to make it a success.
Charles, now in the financial services space, and you and I have spoken about this as well, is to say that in the financial services space where we deal with regulated entities, there's a way to verify this. I know with the NCR, you simply go onto their website, you enter the company's name, and it'll tell you whether they're NCR registered or not. Is it possible for someone to get into an agreement and have the NCR party that is registered be a different party, be a third party? And if that is the case, should you not be contracting directly with that party to protect yourself as the lendee or the
borrower? You should always know who you're dealing with. And you know, in addition to what I said earlier, if there's no transparency that you're alluding to, then I think it's a non-starter. Then I think you've chosen the wrong counterparty. You should, as you correctly say, enter into a transaction with the direct party that is registered with the National Credit Regulator, because there are rules. You know, not anybody can go and lend money, et cetera. There are absolute certain rules that you have to abide by. And if your counterparty isn't aware of it, or doesn't subscribe to the rules, and I think you're making a mistake, truth be told.
What are the mistakes are commonly made, Charles, that we need to look out for, that we need to avoid? Where are some of the red flags or some of the easy things that you can vet before you get into these agreements so that you avoid making these mistakes?
Look, I think from somebody who looking to borrow the money, I think they've got to do their homework, number one, commercially. You know, it's easy to borrow money, and I say that tongue-in-cheek, it's easy to borrow money. Not always that easy to pay it back. So just make sure of your opportunity in front of you, that it's affordable, you've done the numbers, it does make sense. So I think that's from a borrower's perspective, because as I mentioned earlier, life happens and it may not work out. And if it doesn't work out, then there are going to be consequences, you know, to everybody, as it were. On the other side, you know, again, make sure that the counterparty is regulated, NCR registered, been in business, transparent, and has really got the credentials. You know, have they been around long enough to actually treat the customer fairly, so to speak?
If you're just tuning in, we're chatting to Charles Meyerowitz, who is of Lamna Financial, around asset-backed financing and just understanding the implications thereof. Charles, now let's take a look at some of the solutions. I mean, you alluded to this at the start of our conversation, saying that there's different types of lending. What do we need to look at? What do we need to think about as someone coming into the space wanting to borrow some money, or I've got an asset and I want some asset-backed financing? Is there a particular type of asset that I need to be bringing to the table that's valued a little more than something else? Is it specific to the transactions? What kind of solutions out there?
So I think it very much depends on the quantum of the money that you're looking for, on the amount of money that you're looking for. I can tell you our history has been motor vehicles and trucks are probably by far the most common type of asset. They generally tend to attribute the most value. And in that basis, you know, whether you've got a spare key and it's serviced regularly and it's well maintained, that will obviously enhance the value. It's not uncommon for Ferraris and BMWs and Range Rovers to be the collateral that is offered, because that attracts the correct sum of money. On the other hand, watches, Rolexes, Audemars Piguet, Richard Mille, you know, that type of asset, provided it's fully paid, you got the box and you got the papers and you can show ownership, that would very much qualify for asset-backed facilities. And if you've got something different, art, you know, anything, and I think that's another benefit of the space that Lamna's in, is that we can attribute value to almost any type of asset. Almost anything has a value, and we can try and attribute value to that and accordingly facilitate a transaction where other, what I call traditional lenders, wouldn't be able, you know, you can't take your art to a bank and say, I've got this beautiful art piece, please can you give me a loan? It's very secure, they've got the collateral, and they just can't do it, they're just not structured to do it. And that's where, Lamna, that's where we come in, where we can attribute value. We've done wine collections, we've done whiskey collections, we've attributed value to hearses and aeroplanes. You know, there's just such a diversity that one can offer that can monetize those assets to give you the capital that you need to fulfill your project.
So Charles, how does one then go about the process of, say, screening? You've touched a lot on doing your own research and just trying to understand this and unpack this. How does one go about taking their assets or researching the value of their assets if they want an independent valuation, for example, versus what they want to do, and just understanding the payment cycle, the payment terms, and that sort of thing around the repayment of the loan once they have it, obviously.
So to me, maybe the best way to answer that is to go through a typical process that might happen. And invariably, it starts online. You go onto our website, lamna.co.za. There's multiple ways that you can engage with us through WhatsApp, this, that, or the other. You describe the asset to us. We will come back to you fairly quickly with, based on the description that you've given to us, we will attribute a value. If we need more information, we'll ask you for that information. And once we've agreed on a value in principle, we then ask you to come to one of our offices. We have offices here, and Johannesburg, Cape Town, PE, Durban, Botswana, London, etc. And come to our office. We will then evaluate the asset together with you. We will be totally transparent as to how we have valued it. If you disagree with the value, then we'll engage. We will try and come to some form of agreement as to what the value is. Bear in mind, values are subjective, so sometimes there is that discussion that we have. We will rely on professional valuators in order to assist us with the value. Once we agree on the actual loan value based on the asset, we'll enter into the agreement. Documentation will be signed that will protect your interest, it will protect our interest. We'll both know exactly where we stand. In terms of the payment, there'll be a monthly interest payment that is expected from you to us. But we don't require the capital until such time as your capital is ready to be paid back. And that creates the flexibility of this type of transaction.
Mm. And Charles, what about the interest rates? What? Obviously, it is a lending facility. There would be a repayment with an interest rate. How do you? We spoke about the NCR element of it being able to regulate that aspect of it. But what are the interest rate ranges that people need to be aware of, that need to be conscious of? And when do you sit back and say this is an excessive rate or these are excessive terms?
Yeah. So because it's regulated by the NCR, the NCR does give a maximum interest that we can charge. Interest rates vary between 3% and 5% per month. It is a short-term product, bearing in mind. And I think that was my point that I was alluding to earlier, is that when taking the finance, make sure it all works. You know, it is project finance. It is short-term finance. Make sure you've got to make sure you've done the numbers. The interest is payable on a monthly basis. If you've got surplus funds, you're welcome to pay more. That will reduce the capital. And then the capital can be repaid once your cash flows, once the borrower's cash flows have come back from the project that they actually busy financing.
Mm. Charles, how do we deal with the misconceptions around the concept that this sort of financing is for vulnerable and desperate individuals and not really a useful tool in business. How do we tackle that?
That's a great task that you ask. You know, unfortunately, that reputation has come from people not being treated fairly. I would say from people who have not acted within the regulations. And it all goes back to that original comment. Make sure that your counterparty has integrity, that there's transparency, that there's history, that there's regulation, etc. I can't overemphasize there's no other better word to say that the integrity of the partner opposite you that you're dealing with, because it can be shady. And yes, it can be vulnerable, but it needn't be if your counterparty is a credible counterparty.
We'll leave it at that, Charles. I think that's a good point to leave it at. Do your research, find a credible partner, and most importantly, find a regulated partner to partner with. Thanks so much for those insights, Charles. That's Charles Meyerowitz, who is the co-founder at Lambda Financial, joining me to reflect on asset-backed financing and how it all works.